For every athlete who makes it to the Olympics, there are thousands who don't. Kids who grow up dreaming of and working toward a life in sports.
I began playing late, actually, probably around age 9. Most of the guys who decide to pursue it professionally start in age 6 or so. But I was playing national tournaments at that time. I think I was ranked top 50 in the U.S. In the singles.
J.R. Thornton was once a serious tennis player on the junior circuit. Then he moved to China.
At the time, my dad was teaching at a university in China. And so we sort of looked into whether or not I might be able to play over there and saw it as an opportunity to, you know, live in a new place, spend time with my dad, learn a new language, and while also working on tennis.
He wound up spending a year training with the Beijing national team, where he discovered just how different the life of an aspiring champion could be in a country that treats its young athletes very differently.
Madame Jiang stood at the net with her large shopping cart and fed balls side to side. We each hit 6 shots, and then the next player rotated in. In the year I spent in China, Madame Jiang never once adjusted or corrected anyone's technique. She offered up no comments as to where we hit the ball. Didn't matter if we hit them all cross-court down the line or in the bottom of the net. It was a stark contrast to the methods I was familiar with in America. Since I was 9 years old, I had spent every summer and winter vacation at tennis academies in Florida. At those academies, every drill we did during practice was chosen for a reason. We would work on specific shots, running forehands, topspin lobs, angled passing shots. The coaches did video analysis of our technique, designed specific fitness and workout plans that were tailored to each individual player, charted statistics in our matches, and carefully monitored our progress and improvement over time. In China, there was none of that. There was just a woman who clearly knew very little, if anything, about tennis, and their shopping cart of 300 tennis balls that were so old that some of them hardly bounced. When I saw what these players were working with, I was amazed that they were as good as they were.
That's an excerpt from J.R. Thornton's new novel, Beautiful Country, which is based on that year he spent in China. It's the story of an American boy coming to terms with his own privilege, and it's an homage to his former teammates. J.R., tell me about the boys that you, or in this case, your character plays with. I know the boys in the novel are not the real kids you played with in China. I assume they're kind of composites, but based on kids you knew.
Yeah, definitely. I think composite's a good word to describe where I sort of got those characters from. Most of them were from very poor backgrounds. They had been within the Chinese system since they were very young, age 6, 7, and had been paid a salary by the government since they were extremely young. And they did schooling, but it was very minimal. And it wasn't nearly enough to prepare them to be able to take a university exam or anything like that. It was really just, I think, to very basic rudimentary schooling. And one of the things that surprised me was that I believe all of them, certainly almost all of them, were lying about their age by a year or two.
How come?
So in tennis, it's a huge advantage to be playing against younger players. You know, the physical difference between a 16-year-old and a kid who's just turned 13 can be huge. It can be, you know, a foot and a half difference. And one's basically almost a man, the other one's still a young child. That size difference just translates into being able to serve 30 miles an hour harder. You can move quicker, everything. So, and they were very open about the fact that they were doing this. They said, look, everyone does it, and we don't really have a choice because if we don't do it, then we're just going to be the ones who are playing against kids who are 2 years older than us.
And the stakes were incredibly high for them. They'd basically been trained to do nothing but play tennis, and yet the program seemed designed to flunk a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pyramid system, and so almost the older you get, the higher the stakes get, because, you know, if you're cut young enough where you can get back into the school system and do something else, you're better off than if you're age 15 and the only thing you know how to do is play tennis. There was one Chinese athlete in the early 90s who won a gold medal at the Olympics and then got a lot of criticism because she came out and said that the system cares about creating medals, it doesn't care about the athletes. And that's, I think, a good way of thinking about it.
What happens to boys who fail?
Well, most of the kids I played with, it was they were going to be doing something very menial labor or selling things in the market or... One boy's dad made a living by selling cheap sort of wife beater shirts to construction workers and just going like door to door selling those. And that's what he was going to do after he stopped playing tennis.
We should talk about a particular character, try to bring somebody to life. How about your character, Bowen? He's a beautiful player to begin with. Is he based on anyone?
Bowen's a composite of a few players I knew. One of the ideas I sort of had when I was coming up with his character was when you watch someone like Roger Federer play tennis or Steph Curry play basketball or one of the real greats, and you just get the sense that they've sort of been put on the earth to do this sport and everything's aligned and they're just do this at a different level. I sort of wanted to think about a character who was like, you know, had that ability, but just circumstances didn't allow them to reach their potential and sort of the tragedy of that. He's also a very independent, strong-willed character. And his sort of conflicts with Madame Zhang, I looked at as sort of a microcosm of the conflicts of the new China sort of emerging while the old China is still present and that sort of battle between two different identities of society. Because that's definitely something that was going on in Beijing at the time. You have skyscrapers going up to next to old neighborhoods that have, you know, been there for 1,000 years, and people are trying to figure out where they fit into this new China.
There's another story you tell in the book about a boy named Hope, an ironic name, who's a good player but then starts burning out, which is something you'd seen before, not that unusual among, you know, young players in the U.S., kids who've, you know, maybe gone through a bunch of those tennis academies and have just been training too intensely, too focused on playing.
Absolutely. I think tennis in particular is the risk of burnout is extremely high.
Okay.
Higher, I think, than, well, first of all, it's an individual sport, so you're entirely on your own, and everyone you're practicing with is technically a competitor. So it's a lot of pressure, and just because of the way the game has developed, if you want to make it as a professional now, you really have to start practicing at age 6 years old.
Wow.
You have to be playing minimum 3 hours a day. Most of the kids are playing 6 hours a day in Florida. And, you know, you do that every day of your life, and it just becomes like a job. You know, I knew a lot of kids in the U.S. whose families would sell their house and move to Florida or move to California so that the son could practice at an academy there or work with a certain coach there. And if you think about the pressure on, you know, a 14-year-old, every time he goes and plays a tournament, has his whole family there watching him and knowing that they've just, you know, relocated across the country so that he can do this. I think, hard for a lot of teenagers to handle that.
I mean, put that way, it sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Did you like it? I mean, you were part of that world for a while.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely days where you wake up and you don't want to practice, but I loved competing, so I found that as long as I was playing tournaments and stuff, I loved the sport. It would just be tough if you're just practicing every day without the bits that make it fun. But I think anyone in the pro tour, if you read a lot of those, you know, memoirs of former players and stuff, they say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading something that Sampras said, and he said, if you want to make it to number one, it's all about feeling like it, even when you're not feeling like it. And of the American players I know who did make it, you know, to the top 200 or top 100 in the ATP tour now, you know, I can remember periods when they went through real slumps in the juniors because they just, you know, were out there on the court looking like they weren't having fun at all. But, you know, that's why I think it's something that's important to manage. And telling the story of Hope, I guess, is an example where instead of helping the player manage all that pressure and stress, the coach was just making it worse.
Yeah, not only doesn't give him a break, instead she breaks him.
Right.
Madame Zhang became harder than ever on Hope. For 3 days in a row, she spent the entire practice on Hope's court, standing behind him and shouting at him whenever he missed an easy overhead or volley. I could see that Hope tried to block her out. He pretended she wasn't there and he gazed ahead into nothingness. But I could also see that she made him nervous. He played far worse whenever she was watching, and the worse he played, the more she screamed. A couple weeks later, he snapped. During a practice set with Random, he missed a put-away overhead right on top of the net on set point. From 3 courts away, Madame Zhang screamed for everyone to stop. She ran over to Hope's court and started shouting at him, telling him what a useless player he was. At first, he stood there and took it. As she yelled at him, he kept his eyes focused on the ground. But then, without warning, Hope let out a yell and suddenly smashed his racket on the ground, breaking it in half. The courts were silent. I only saw him again once after that day. A few weeks later, as I was leaving practice with Victoria, I saw Hope across the street, sitting on the curb, staring at the entrance to the sports complex. He removed his glasses and wiped his face with the dirty gray t-shirt he was wearing. When he pulled the shirt away, I saw that he had been crying. He put his glasses back on and we made eye contact for a second, but then he looked away and walked off with his head bowed. And that was the last time I ever saw him. Before coming to Beijing, I had a bad habit of cracking rackets when I wasn't playing well. Most of the kids I played with in the States had broken at least two or three rackets out of frustration. We did it because we thought it looked cool, because we saw players like Marat Safin do it on television. After what happened to Hope, I made a promise that I would never again break a racket. I remembered the old beat-up equipment that Hope had to use. What had seemed cool to me before suddenly felt spoiled and entitled. From then on, every time I raised my racket in thoughtless anger, ready to bring it down on the hard cement, I would see that image of Hope sitting on the curb with tears in his eyes, and I never broke another racket again.
Looking back, what impact did training with those boys in China have on you personally?
I mean, it had a really big impact on me, and it's, I had really grown up inside a bubble of real privilege. I'd gone to, nice private schools in London and New Jersey, and to step outside that and become very good friends with kids who just, grown up with this kind of system and been born into real poverty, it just really opened my eyes to a side of life I'd never experienced before. And seeing their work ethic and their drive and how sort of mature I felt they were, it showed me, the meaning of hard work. And if you're trying to achieve something, you really have to, match that level of intensity in going after it. Because if you aren't staying after practice, running sprints and, running till you throw up, there are kids around the world who are doing that. And, I came from a school where I think the school's motto was everyone's a winner. And it just totally shielded students there from the real sort of competitiveness of life.
J.R. Thornton. His debut novel is called Beautiful Country.